It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Beavers conclude a winning season, but go down in the final game of the year. Welcome to the Beaver Banter Podcast. I am Aaron Fendris, along with the Oregonian's Nick Dasho, who covers the Beavers. He was at every game this season. We're going to review a little bit of the game that they lost to Utah State down in LA, but mostly talk about the season as a whole, like what was good, what was bad, what to look forward to for next year as we sort of wrap up this season for the Beavers. Nick, how are you doing? You had a little time off, right?
I did. I'm now starting to figure out how to cover basketball when they're not playing basketball games. So, it's. It looks like Saturday's game against Oregon is going to be off. So it just continues.
Well, unfortunately, with the Blazers, I'm covering basketball while they're playing basketball, and it's not very pretty basketball. So I'm trying to figure that out too on a nightly basis in terms of how do you write the same game story every night. Anyway, these Beavers. Let's talk about the first question here. Successful season or not, especially given expectations. You go first. We're at the end of this thing. Looking back, success or not?
Well, I'd like to hear anybody's take on how this wasn't a successful season. And just given, you know, what this program's gone through over the last 8 to 10 years, 7 wins is a successful season. I bring any argument you want to the table. It's just not going to fly. 7 wins is two more than they've had in any season since 2013. A bowl game. They won every game at home this year for the first time, and I'm blanking on it, but I think it was 2000 or something like that. There were a number of, milestones they hit this season that they haven't hit in a while, and there's just no reason to think this season didn't meet or exceed expectations, because it did.
I agree. The problem is you sort of build up expectations or you build down expectations depending on how a season flows. Had they closed this season with 2 wins to just, let's say they start out, 4-5, and it's like, oh, are they going to make the bowl? Are they going to make the bowl? And then they close the season strong and they get in. Everyone's all rejoicing and it's great. But when you get to where they got to, where at one point they were 4-1.
They were 5-2.
They were 4-1 first and then 5-2. So when you're 4-1, 5-2, well, now you're thinking, like, we even talked about it back then. You're thinking, heck, could they get to 8? Could they get the 9-8 before the bowl game and 9 total? What is possible here, especially when the rest of the conference was looking so bizarre and weak? And then, you're sitting at 5-2, sorry. And then you lose at Cal, at Colorado. That stings because you would think you're better than those two teams at that point. You rally against Stanford, which was just a mess. The Arizona State win was definitely quality. You lose to Oregon, that's expected. And then you close with a loss against a mid-major team. A good one, but still. So there's some disappointment there to be had at the end, I think, because I think expectations were probably raised. But if you're realistic and you're fair, you look at the entire thing and say, hey, they made a bowl game for the first time since 2013. You can't really sneeze at that. Let's build upon this and hopefully do better next season.
Yeah, if you're looking at the, glass half full, you got to look at the, the body of work, and the body of work was good. You got to start from the, go from the start and all the way to the finish. Now, if you're looking at it, what could have been, sure, maybe it wasn't a great season because, they probably did leave a couple of wins out there on the field, but is there any team outside of Oregon that didn't do that? I mean, Oregon, when they lost, they found a way to get hammered. But Oregon State, I mean, there was, you know, the Colorado game was certainly winnable. I'm not going to say Cal was, you know, they had a shot in that game, but, you know, Purdue was a game they could have won. Washington State was a game, you know, they were right in it to the end. So, I mean, it could have been a 9-win season. And certainly, you know, you get to that point, then you're probably playing in a better bowl game to begin with, you know, after that. But
right.
But like I said, every team can say, you know, has a couple of woulda, coulda, shouldas. You know, they delivered, they won most of the games they should have won. And that's, for that reason alone, given the way this program is, performed over the last 8 to 10 years, it's a successful season.
Yeah, no doubt. We totally agree on that. I think most people would disagree. What's really interesting is when you look at the Pac-12 as a whole and how, you know, down it was, and just how, you know, you can call it parity or call it mediocrity or both. But the fact is that Oregon State played probably its best game when you consider the opponent against Utah, which won the conference and did so by, you know, smashing Oregon twice. But then you can't beat Cal and Colorado. Like, that's what's just bizarre about their season. So it speaks to their inconsistencies, but it also in a lot of ways speaks to the potential that this team had that maybe they can build upon for next season. So let's go into the things that worked and the things that didn't, and also forecast a little bit to next season. What worked most for you this season for the Beavers?
Well, the offensive line, you have to start with that. That was one of the best offensive lines in the country. Now, maybe as the season got toward the end, it wasn't quite as effective, probably because, you know, opponents had so much tape on them that they were, you know, they had some things they could do against this offensive line. But for the most part, I mean, these guys dominated. They dominated defensive fronts during the season. They ran the ball as well as any team in the Pac-12, and they protected the quarterback. And that number one was the thing that worked best. And then, you know, because of the offensive line, the running game was really good. They had, you could argue, B.J. Baylor, if he's not the best running back in the conference, he was probably one of the top three. I mean, he ran for close to 1,300 yards this season, and you know, he's on his way to the NFL draft. I don't know if, you know, if he'll get in a camp or not, but he's the latest running back Oregon State has. They've now had three running backs under Jonathan Smith that are going to get a sniff in an NFL camp, if not, you know, land on a roster. Three, right. Pierce, Jefferson, and then we'll see with Baylor, but. And then the run defense was better this year. I mean, that's been a sore spot for throughout Jonathan Smith's 10 years. They just couldn't stop the run. And I mean, were they great? No, but they did hold teams. They didn't give up a lot of explosive runs, and they forced teams to have to throw the ball, which I guess we'll get to on what didn't work this season, but
they forced teams to do the things that couldn't stop, right?
They forced teams to be one dimensional, which was probably worked out in their favor, but they did stop the run. They did stop the run better than they have in the first 4 years of Jonathan Smith's tenure. So I would say those three things are what worked best for this team.
You mentioned the run defense. I was trying to call it up real quick here. The Beavers allowed 143 per game, which ranked sixth. That's middle of the pack. Not too bad. As for their run game, they led the conference, correct? I mean, I think they finished number one, didn't they?
They were either one or two. I mean, there were some. I think Utah might have edged them out toward the end.
Yeah, Utah edged them out by a yard and a half, and 0.6 yards per carry. Oh wait, no, Oregon State finished third. Sorry, third behind UCLA and Utah, separated by 4 yards. Between them, they averaged 5.3 per carry, which was tied for second best in the conference. So definitely one of the premier rushing teams in the Pac-12.
What did they give up per run on defense? I don't have the stats up in front of me, but I think it was fairly decent for Oregon State.
Yeah, I'm right here. Let's see, rushing defense 4.1. give which, up 4.1 I mean, and rush.
It's not super, but it's definitely better than it'd been in the first 3 years. I mean, I think 3 years ago they gave up over 6 yards a run or something like that. So yeah, it was better. It was better.
So let's get to what didn't work. You were complaining all season about the tight end production. You wanted some tight end action, didn't get much of it. So let's talk about what you think didn't work.
The inconsistent production from the receiving and tight end positions are a little bit of a concern. And I'm beginning to wonder if maybe they just played too many guys. I don't know if that's an issue or not. But they played a lot of receivers, and I don't know if anybody was ever able to get into a rhythm at all out there. And maybe it's because they don't really have a great receiver outside of Trayvon Bradford, who I wouldn't say is great, but you know he's certainly a starter on a lot of teams. But they weren't able to make big plays down the field. They had trouble separating at times. Got to give them a little bit of credit though. They were good as run blockers. I know Canzano and I, we watched, obviously we were at a number of games together, and we constantly remark when they run those fly sweeps that the receivers they take it all the way to the sideline rather than cut it up when there was a hole. And I don't know, it just seemed like there was places to run on those. And for some reason they take it all the way to the sideline.
They're trying to get wide
all the time. Yeah. And that was, to me, that seemed like a little bit of an issue too, but and then with the tight end, Brian Lindgren and Jonathan Smith constantly referred to the, one issue with the lack of throws to the tight end is opportunity. We ran the ball a lot. We didn't throw it a lot. I mean, I get it. But if you got a tight end like Luke Musgrave, you got to throw to him.
He had 22 catches for 300 yards.
I mean, I think he caught 7 passes against Oregon. I mean, I don't know what I'm missing. In fact, it's something I'm going to, talk to Smith and Brian about, in the next month or two. Just, what am I missing there? What was he not getting open? Why wasn't he more part of the game plan when it came to throwing the ball to him? Because, I mean, you see these tight ends can make a big difference if you got a good one that can run and he's big and he's both. And he's got to be a bigger part of the offense next year. I'm assuming he'll be back, but that to me was kind of a negative. Obviously the pass defense was inconsistent. At times they were good. They were better when Alton Julian was playing. He got hurt at the end of the Utah game blew out his knee, lost for the season, and that it seemed like then it really got to be an issue, defending the pass, and a lot of that had to do with they just weren't the backers just weren't getting to the quarterback, and the rush wasn't getting to the quarterback. And I mean, it was glaring in the Utah State game how a guy who had never thrown a college pass in his life was just sitting back there, checking, looking second, third receiver, no problem, and he just had all kinds of time to throw. And so that was a big issue is a pass rush, especially the second half of the season. And then third down defense, that didn't really seem to get much better throughout the season. It was one of the worst in the country, and it didn't matter whether it was third and short, third and long. Teams were hitting it 50%+ against Oregon State. And I mean, if you want to be a good defense, you got to get off the field, and they weren't able to do that this year.
So one thing about the tight ends, I'm looking at it here. So you had Musgrave with 22 catches, which was fourth on the team, and then you had Teagan Quatariano. Is that right?
Yeah.
Who had 19. So those guys combined for 41, and there were only 218 completions on the season. So they accounted for about 20%, which isn't horrible. And to Jonathan's point, they didn't throw a ton. So if you threw more and everyone else's numbers went up, then maybe you get Musgrave to 38, 40, you get Teagan to 28 or what have you. But still, I would think that when you have a young quarterback, and you run the game really well, that the play action pass and the short passes to the tight end, whether it's a choice route, a flat route, a hitch, a quick slant, or whatever, those things are really high completion percentage plays. And you know, those are things that they maybe could have gone to more often to just give Chance some easy, you know, quick completions, which in most pro style offenses, those types of passes to the tight end are money, especially when you're a good rushing team.
Well, and also, you know, just given the lack of size on at the receiving position, I mean, they don't really have it's one of the smaller receiving units in the Pac-12, and Luke Musgrave is standing out there at 6'6". He's just, I guess part of it was, you know, we just saw him during camp in August, and he just dominated. I mean, he was just dominant in every scrimmage, and it just was like, this guy's going to be he's going to be first team All Pac-12. He's going to catch 50 or 60 passes. He's going to break records. Because he can do it all. And then he got in the games, and not much of anything.
You are listening to Beaver Banter, and we'll be right back after a quick break. Biggest concerns to the season and moving forward?
Yeah, to start with, I'd say the finish to the season. I didn't think this team finished very well. They really didn't defend well at all in the Oregon game, and they were out of it from the first quarter on. They were playing uphill, just trying to catch up. And I didn't, even though it was a 9-point game at the end, I didn't feel like they were all that competitive in that game. That was kind of disappointing. And then the bowl game, I mean, that was a game where they really could have stepped on Utah State's throat, early on, and didn't. And then they let a guy, like I said before, a quarterback come in that never thrown a college pass before, just light him up. And then the offense just laid an egg in the LA Bowl. So, you know, again, we went back, you know, we talked about how the season was successful, but I mean, to finish the season with two losses and really not really that competitive either. I mean, the Utah State game, they were close to getting blown out in that game. So, you know, the finish to the season to me was one of the big concerns. Their play on the road was not good. 2 years ago, that was their strength. They went on the road and they won several road. They beat Arizona. They won the 3-game tournament, UCLA, Arizona, and Cal. And they'd kind of build up this, you know, reputation where, you know, where they kind of, you know, circle the wagons, you know, that stuff you always talk about when you're going on the road. And this year, they, outside of the USC game, they didn't play well on the road this year. And so that's something they got to address. The trajectory of the defense, it was better this year, but it's got to get a lot better. If this team really wants to go where it thinks it can go, I mean, they've got to improve again, and that could happen with a new defensive coordinator. And you know, finally, I think we've already talked about this, but the receiver play that's got to improve too. But I expect it's going to have to next year, because it's hard to believe they're going to be able to run the ball as effectively as they did this last season. So those would be my biggest concerns coming out of the 21 season.
What was your game of the year for the Beavers?
You know, it's kind of a coin flip to me between Utah and USC. I know people will point to the Utah game as, you know, being the game of the year, and it probably was. I mean, they were down 14-0, and they really dominated the game for the final three quarters, against a team that ended up winning the Pac-12 and clobbering Oregon, you know, twice and almost winning the Rose Bowl. So, I mean, that was a big win, but I keep going back to the USC game, even though USC wasn't very good. I mean, that game kind of set the tone for the season, it seemed like. You know, they went down there and jumped on USC and really played well in a place they hadn't won in 50 years, and so 60 years. So I kind of like those as co-games of the year, even though I know the Utah game will be more meaningful to a lot of people.
All right, for me, it's the Utah game by far. I mean, I think at the time we both were, you know, going off about the USC win because of, you know, historically what it meant. And at the time still, though, it seemed like USC might be a good team, but they were not. They were a bad team. And Utah was a really good team who, again, just throttled Oregon twice. I just think when you look at the totality of the season, yeah, USC has a sexier name, and that was a big deal at the time. But overall, I just feel like that win over Utah was the bigger win, and why it made me feel even more disappointed for them in the way they closed the season. Because if you took out Utah like that, you know, how do you lose the three games that you did to Cal, Colorado, and Utah State? I mean, to me, you should win two of those three if you were able to beat Utah like that. But again, it's just, you know, it's just how you tend to look at it. But both those victories were huge for the program and speak well for their trajectory.
No, I agree. And again, Utah, I don't know if Oregon State plays Utah a month later, how that turns out. Utah was still trying to find itself at that point. They, you know, they had just been going through, you know, the tragedy off the field. I think that it was either that week or the week before was the week they had the funeral. And maybe they caught Utah at the right time, but, you know, they beat Utah and no one else in the Pac-12 did this year. So, I mean, so yeah, I mean, I can definitely see that argument that's the game of the year.
All right, let's get to some awards here. The official, the first annual Beaver Banter year end awards. We need some kind of like music, some like Academy Award music here. All right. MVP offense. Who you got?
Well, BJ Baylor's probably going to be on the top of most people's list based on his production. He was, you know, he had 6 100 yard games. He was first team all Pac-12. You know, he really was the guy that made that running game go. They had a few other guys that contributed, but he was the main guy. I still, and it's hard to give an MVP to an offensive lineman because they really play as a unit, not as a single guy. But Nathan Eldridge was seventh year center. He was a rock all season. The coaches raved about how he had taken his game to a level where he was really effective at getting to the second level and blocking linebackers. And he was first team all conference as well. And if you're asking me of all the players coming out this year in Oregon State that are going to the NFL draft, which one's going to go highest, I would say Eldridge is probably the most likely guy to go, you know, the highest in the draft. If, you know, I have no idea where these guys are going to go, but that's my gut, is that he'll be the most attractive to an NFL team. So I'm going to say Baylor, but Nathan Eldridge, I got to give him a nod.
I'm going to cheat and go the entire offensive line. Last year, Jefferson went off, you know, behind the O-line. And obviously, you know, changes here and there. But then they come right back the next season, and that unit kills it again with a new running back. So clearly, you can plug in any good running back behind that crew, and they get it done. So I'm going to go give some love to the offensive line. O-lines, man, they make a team go. And a lot of times they get overlooked for a lot of different reasons until – they're not opening holes or they're allowing sacks. Then people notice. And all too often they get sort of the shaft in terms of praise. So I'm going to cheat and go the entire O-line, which includes Eldridge, of course. Okay, now defensive MVP, who you got?
If you're just going on stats, it's got to be Avery Roberts, right? I mean, he led the conference in tackles. He was, you know,
128. First,
and he missed a game. He missed two games and missed, shoot, 2.5 games. So he certainly could add more, and he's first team all conference, but he does play at a position that's going to rack up a lot of tackles, you know, the way Oregon State plays defense. Omar Spates had a lot of tackles too. I thought Roberts was pretty good in one-on-one situations. So, you know, he had a solid season. I just keep going back to a guy that only played, you know, 6 or 7 games, Alton Julian, his safety. When he was in there, their defense at times could be dominant at times, because he was good at coming up and defending the run, but he could cover too, and it just seemed like their pass defense worked a little better when he was in the game. But when he tore up his knee during the Utah game, I mean, it's no it's no coincidence they had probably the two worst defensive games right after that in Cal and Colorado, which led to Tim Tibisar getting fired. So, I mean, I you got to give it to Roberts, but Alton Julian was certainly a factor on this defense this year.
So this season is in the rear view mirror. Let's look ahead to spring ball. When does spring ball start, by the way? When do they get rolling?
Well, they won't nail down a time yet, but they usually, the way it's been going, they'll start maybe 2 weeks before spring break, take a week or two off, and then come back and do the final 3 weeks in April. But they haven't announced a schedule, and they probably won't for a month or two. But yeah, it's going to be, there's a couple of interesting situations going into spring ball, I think.
Yeah, what would you say are the main areas that must either be replenished and or just see overall development in order for this team to take the next step? And that, you know, if you go 7-6, the next step is trying to win, you know, 9 games, with one of those being the bowl game, I would imagine. What has to happen for this team in the offseason?
The area that's going to get the most looks, not probably from the coaches, but at least from fans, is the quarterback. Is it Chance Nolan or is it somebody else? I mean, Chance fell into a good situation this year because Tristan Jebbia was hurt, Ben Gulbranson was hurt, Sam Vidlak was a freshman, and Sam Noyer just wasn't effective in the opener against Purdue, and so he came in and had a solid season. But I haven't asked Jonathan this yet, but I'm going to when he gets back from all his Christmas vacation. I got to believe that Chance Nolan is number one going into spring, but he's going to have a battle on his hands. Tristan Jebbia, if his hamstring is healed, he'll give Chance a battle, and Gulbranson's got a good arm. And if his shoulder's healed, he's going to give Nolan a battle too. So I can see it being at least a 3-man battle going into camp. And who's to say that there's not a transfer guy that they're looking at to bring in and add to the mix. They did that last year, and that seems to be in vogue right now. Is there's a lot of quarterbacks in the portal, and
Caleb Williams. Sure, is Caleb coming to Corvallis?
No, I don't think so. But I mean, there's a, you know, they could all, they're not done yet either, getting into the portal. So who's to say that there won't be another guy in there? But I don't think it's Nolan. I don't think the job is necessarily Nolan's going to next season, but he does have a leg up. Somebody's going to have to, prove they're better than him.
Well, yeah. I mean, the bottom line is that if you want to take the next step as a program and get, into that 9-10 win window, you're going to have to either be dominant on both the defense and the running game, or dominant in one and have a really, really good quarterback. And that was one of the always things with Oregon the last couple of years when people were talking about playoffs with Oregon. I was always like, what are they great at? Where are they great? The running game has not been great. The defense hasn't been great the last 2 years, and your quarterback hasn't been great. And you're talking about playoffs? Really? It's just ridiculous. So it's the same thing here with Oregon State. If Oregon State wants to get into that where they can win 9, maybe 10, you got to be great at least one of those three areas. And quarterback is usually the one that can elevate everything, because a great quarterback can overcome a bad defense. A great quarterback can overcome a bad rushing attack, and especially if one who can use his legs to create offense as well. So, yeah, Chance Nolan was nice, but he wasn't good enough. Jebbia is nice, but he wasn't good enough last year when he played. One of those two or someone else has to elevate their game to the point where they are considered an impact quarterback who can win a game or two literally by themselves. I mean, like, where everything else is going bad, the other team's scoring 40, your running game's mediocre, but your quarterback's throwing 5 touchdowns and you win the game. That's where you pick up those extra wins against those good teams where things are going poorly for you. We can go back, to Mariota. Mariota's senior year, they won a game in Washington State. They had no business winning, but he had more touchdown passes than incompletions, and they won the game. So, for me, it's not even about where Nolan is or where Jebby is. It's that one of those guys or someone else has to completely raise their level of play. If they all say the same and Jonathan Smith just picks one, then you didn't advance. Someone has to become a lot better.
Yeah, and whoever that is, he's going to have to be a guy that can stretch the field a little bit, because that's what this offense really lacked this year. You know, it's nice to have a running game that can keep the chains moving and all that, but it's hard to win football games with 12-play, 80-yard drives. You got to have a couple right. of scoring drives where you hit an explosive play and, you know, go three plays, 60 yards for a touchdown. You just do in today's era. So that was a problem. They were not able to hit big plays down the field, and so that'll be an emphasis, I'm sure, this spring. You know, the other big newsy piece to spring ball will be what does Trent Bray do on defense with it? You know, now he's the coordinator. He's certainly going to make some, you know, I don't know if he's going to make wholesale changes, but he's certainly got a different approach. You know, is he going to add more to the blitz packages? Is, you know, what's he going to do up front? There's a lot of things, you know, we're kind of curious. Is he going to go with a, you know, they had been a 3-4. I know I think he prefers having, you know, four guys up front, but he likes to mix it up too. So I can see him going, you know, going between 3-4, 4-3, you know, different looks. Well, I'd be curious to see what he does with this defense. Those are the two things, the quarterback and you know, what they do with the defense are the big items going in the spring.
How successful do you think Oregon State's going to be in the transfer portal, or how successful have they been?
It's unclear. I mean, they have a defensive end outside linebacker transfer from Florida they've had on campus, you know, since the fall. Andrew Chatfield, he's been there and working out with them. So I think, you know, they'll be looking for some help in the secondary. If they can get a big receiver, that, you know, they got Micaiah Tung last year from Georgia, but he struggled with injuries for a lot of this year. But when he was in the game, I mean, he was effective, particularly as a blocker, because he's a big guy. I mean, he looks like a fullback almost. But I think they're going to look, you know, heavy, you know, receiver. Like I said, the secondary. Maybe there's a quarterback out there. Certainly, if they can, they do have Chatfield. But if they can get another guy that can rush the passer, I mean, those are positions they really need. So. The transfer portal is kind of an interesting thing for the, you know, from us, the media, because it's not one of those things. A lot of times those things move really quickly. You know, a guy transfers on a Tuesday and he's at Oregon State on a Thursday. And so you just don't know, except for the highest of profile guys, you know, where they're going. You know, Neuer last year that happened in, I think, less than 48 hours, his transfer from Colorado to Oregon State. So, you know, we'll see. I definitely think they're going to add some guys here in the next several months.
All right. So last thing, we might as well take a way too early look at next season. If you had to guesstimate, what do you think this team can finish next year? You got Boise State at Fresno. So they're going to start out with a tougher non-conference schedule, Montana State. Then in conference, USC, Utah, Stanford, Washington State, Colorado, Washington, Cal, Arizona State, and Oregon. Do you think this team can get to 9 next year, or is 8 maybe the over-under number?
Oh, I mean, I mean, 9 is really, that's really, it's going to be interesting next year, because they have 7 home games. 6 of them will be at a, you know, at Reser, which will be half under construction.
And then I'm saying 9 counting the bowl. So if we just go to 12, let's say
9. You're saying 9-4. You know, Boise State is not the Boise State of Chris Peterson, but they're still a formidable program. Oregon State hasn't won an opener since I want to say 2014. So for some reason they find a way to open against tough opponents, and Boise State's no different. But at least it's at home. It's a, you know, it's a team they should be able to beat. So Fresno State's always going to be a tough ask, especially with their quarterback returning. I'm thinking they're going to be 2-1 out of the non-conference games. Montana State's not a, I mean, they should win Montana State, but they're not a gimme either. They're playing for the FCS championship.
So. Man, if they're not a gimme, then this is going to be a 4-18.
But I mean, Montana State's not. But I'm just saying, Montana State's. I mean, with the FCS team, you like to play somebody other than a team that's playing for the championship. But I mean, you know, yeah, you got the road games are the ones I guess I would look at most. You got Utah, Stanford, Washington, Arizona State. So those four plus Fresno. I mean, Utah. You know, tough ask. Stanford, that's winnable. You know, Washington, that could be winnable. And, you know, Arizona State, unclear. I don't know where that program's headed. So, I mean, my only prediction would be that, yes, this can be a bowl team again. I don't know whether it's 6 wins or 10 wins. It's probably somewhere in the 6 to 8 win range, but we're a long ways. We're a long ways out from that, but I think there's more reason for optimism than pessimism, I guess I would say.
Yeah. If they can get a quarterback in there who can, you know, Chance threw 19 touchdowns this year. If they can get a passing game to where you're throwing 26, 27, maybe even a little bit more, then I'll say this team has a chance to win 8. Right now, based on what we know, I'm going to say that they're going to be 7-5 again in the regular season, and then sort of see what happens in a bowl game. But, you know, we'll see. You never know how things are going to develop, how things are going to shake out. But if I had to put money on it, I would set the over-under at 7.5 and take the under.
Yeah, I think – I mean, if I'm Vegas, I'm looking at this team and probably saying 6.5. That's probably going to land somewhere around there. 7.5 might be a little optimistic. I think 6.5, they'll probably have a better chance of getting money on both sides of that line. 7.5, if you're going over 7.5, you're saying 8 wins. That's a lot of wins to, you know, for a program that hasn't done that in quite a while.
Yeah, and if you make that bet, you're doing it, I think, hoping that the quarterback position in the passing game takes another step and elevates. You know, if you can start producing in the passing game, that's where you get that extra win. Now you're looking at 8, 9, what have you. So we'll see. It's going to be
plus you don't. Plus the other thing, you don't. I mean, plus you're also if you're thinking they're going to win 8 or 9 games, you're also thinking that this is going to be the Pac-12 of 2021, where not very many teams are good. And
look at their schedule. What do we know? I assume USC is going to make a jump, especially if they get Caleb Williams. Although, you know, a lot of people think Caleb Williams might transfer to USC because he played for Riley. But, you know, he could be pissed off at Riley for leaving him. You know, like, he recruited Riley recruited him there and then made him the starter and then bailed. So for all we know, Caleb Williams doesn't want anything to do with Lincoln Riley. But I assume USC is going to be better. We don't really know what to make of all these other teams in the conference, but what's Stanford going to be? What's Washington State going to be? What's Colorado? I mean, at Washington, are they going to be any good? Cal? I mean, to me, all 5 of those games could be very winnable. They could be very losable because those are all mystery teams. So that's why I'm thinking, like, if you got the passing game, 8 is possible because there's so many mediocre teams in this division.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing they don't have on this schedule is just a juggernaut, a game that you can go, you know, it's going to take everything within the kitchen sink to win. There's nobody on this schedule. And I'm throwing Oregon in that mix as well. I mean, there's just nobody on this schedule that you're just thinking is so good that you're going to have a hard time beating them. But they're really, outside of Montana State and Colorado, I think Colorado's a mess. Those two, I mean, I'm be surprised they don't win those two games. But outside of those teams, I mean, shoot, they're all going to be competitive. So you're right. I mean, yeah, if they can get a passing attack going, you wouldn't think the running game is going to fall off a cliff. I mean, it still should be pretty good.
All right. Well, I think we've reached the end of the Beaver Banter podcast season-ending edition. I guess you're just going to be juggling basketball schedules and wondering when games are going to happen or not happen. Is there any hope for the Beavers men's team at all? Or are they pretty much?
Well, I mean, if you're saying hope, I mean, I talked to Wayne Tinkle yesterday for quite a long time, and, you know, I did pose that to him. I said, you're 3-10. Is it going to take another miracle finish like last year to get the NCAA tournament? And that's just really not the way they can look at it. But realistically, that's really the only way you get the NCAAs now is another, you know, big finish. But I mean, the season can still be successful. They could still, you know, they could still get good. They got some pieces that could give you some hope, and you know, they could maybe they string together a bunch of wins in Pac-12 and finish, you know, fourth or fifth. I mean, it wouldn't be that wouldn't be the worst season in the world for this team given the start to this year. So there's that. But and the women's team is, I mean, the women's team is still a work in progress, but I think it's an NCAA tournament team. It's just going to take some time to put together, and they just can't get on a bad run here, but they do tend to get better as the season goes on. And so I think at least the women are going to end up in the postseason this year.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll maybe talk some more football after signing day.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks for listening. Please be sure to click the subscribe button, give us a nice 5-star rating, or you can give Nick a 5-star rating and not give me a rating if you still hold my Duck affiliation against me. That's fine too, but I enjoy doing this podcast with Nick during the season. It's fun to talk some Beaver football, and I look forward to doing some more of it in the future. Thanks for listening.